hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
It's a job, right?
Right. All right, here we go.
No one will pay me to do nothing. I'm still looking for that job.
It's called winning the lottery.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. Go ahead. I'm whispering.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. This is episode 70, our Deadpool spoiler cast. So I'm going to warn you right now, if you haven't seen the movie or you have small children present, you should turn them away and you should turn it off because we're going to ruin it if you haven't seen it. I am Jacob, and with me is my chum, my pal, my cohort, Jeff. How are you today, Jeff?
I am doing great.
Oh, you know, I got to bleep that one because I haven't told people that we're not going to bleep this show yet.
Damn it.
Okay, so for those of you who are out there, we're not going to bleep this show because we're talking about Deadpool, and it is not a movie for kids. It is not a podcast. It is not a podcast for kids. We are going to get into the nitty-gritty. We have a little housekeeping first before I turn Jeff loose for a swear fest par excellent. Apparently, he's been itching for this podcast for me not to bleep him. And I knew he was just going to unload, so I decided I'm just going to warn everybody and we're going to get the little E in iTunes on this one because I would be up until like Thursday trying to bleep this episode.
I just feel like you don't want to talk about this without being real,
keep it real.
Gotta keep it real, man.
But we got a little housekeeping first.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And then we will get to the fucks and the shits and all of that fun stuff.
Are you still beeping this? Because I'm just trying to see, like, how late can I make him stay up?
Nope. I stopped beeping after your first fuck.
Okay.
So, yes. No more fucks will be given about the fucks. If you have a question, a comment, you want to tell us just how juvenile we know you can do that on our call-in line at 317-643-1212. You can remember that because it is like 317-643-fuck-you. Just remember that little mnemonic. You could join our newsletter for some reason. I don't know why you'd want to do that. We haven't sent one out, but we love collecting information on you. We are kind of like a mini NSA, and you could do that at nobettershow.com/join or go throw us a couple of fucking bucks, whatever, at our Patreon website. See, I'm getting all of my language in now, too.
There you go. Woo-hoo.
And that is at patreon.com/nobettershow. We would love a couple of bucks from you and becoming a supporter. That would be awesome. Help keep the lights on and all of that fun stuff. Got a couple of quick listener feedbacks I want to share with you guys. Got an email from Scott directed to me. He said, Jacob, I am a super awesome sales guy. You'll have to take my word on that. I don't have to take your word on nothing, you damn liar. He goes on to say,
"He's a patron, easy chief."
he's still a sales guy. All right, you get an honorary okay just because you're a patron. But he goes on to say, "I carry two spare batteries for my iPhone 6 Plus. One is all, or for his two. I'm sorry, he carries two phones." I apparently butchered this when I copied and pasted. One phone is his phone, and the other phone is a Wi-Fi router. Reasons, I travel all the time. I need GPS, ebooks, podcasts, personal hotspot, phone, text, and camera to be available. He has to always be listening to us. Power and charging stations are typically available, but force you to lose mobility to charge. With spare batteries, I can have all the mobile tools I need for work and personal comfort and keep my mobility. That's why I carry not one, but two spare batteries. Love the show. So thanks for writing in, Scott. I never really thought about that.
I do just want to point out, I'm thinking he's talking about like external batteries.
Yeah, and
though,
he actually tweeted a picture, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I think we were talking about is actually having a spare battery for your phone. So, i.e., you could take the back off, put the phone battery in. So a little bit different. I actually carry external batteries too. Guilty.
But you mean like a pack, like this pack that I'm holding up for one but you to see.
Yes. I have that exact same one.
Yeah, actually. It's cheap on Amazon. And for those of you who want to know what it is, well, no, I'm not going to tell you. No, seriously. It's the Kamashi. K-M-A-S-H-I. It's a
really
great
good
one. It's like under $20. It's nice. It's nice. So,
and it will charge your phone like two solid times easy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, and they do come in handy. So a couple of weeks ago, we had to take the little one to the ER. They thought she might have appendicitis. So we were in the ER all night long, and they admitted us to the hospital. We were in the hospital all night long. And I just happened to have grabbed that on the way out the door. I didn't even think about taking a charger, and I had a cable. And so my wife and I were able to keep charged up, and you know, we were able to play all of our Words with Friends and all of that while paying no attention to the toddler in crisis. And it was great. So that, yeah, that works out.
That's perfect. Yeah. Now, that one may be a little smaller, though. Does that one have two USB ports?
It does, and it's a 10,000 milliamp battery, according to the back.
I think I have the 15,000 milliamp battery, but what I will tell you is that that's what I take whenever I travel with me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't even take a wall charger. I can plug my watch and my phone into it, no problem. And it's a champ. It's a champ.
I had to be out of town back in December, and that's exactly what I did. I grabbed the battery, I grabbed my phone charger cable, and I grabbed my watch charger cable, and that's what I used, and it worked a trick. So, yeah, I don't think that they're, you know, unnecessary. I just question the utility of carrying an extra removable battery if your phone has a removable battery. So, but anyway,
because
we love to hear
the thing I don't like about the removable batteries is, I mean, your phone basically, it has to be off
to swap it
battery out. And the nice thing about external batteries, you're just plugging in. So, anyway.
So, thanks, Scott. Also from John, John wrote in and said, I missed Scott's email address, not our previous Scott, but our guest from last week. But I thought I'd pass this along. I am pretty much all thumbs, very fat thumbs from hammer smashed fingers, but have been enjoying reading about amateur telescope construction. This book has been around for a few years, but the book goes through the thoughts and workings of building a Dobsonian style telescope, everything from balance to managing friction and stiction and truss assembly for mounting a secondary cage assembly. Now, I said all of those words, and individually, I know what they mean, but all put together in that order, I'm a bit at a loss. But the website is obsessiontelescopes.com/publications. He goes on to say, someday when I retire, I might try my hand at building something like it. And I went to the website, and they apparently have some really cool stuff. Like, if you want to learn how to build your own, like, 25-inch Dobsonian telescope, well, they've got plans for that. And it'll probably only set you back about $15,000.
Nice.
So, but I mean, like, I can't even imagine what it would cost to buy a 25-inch telescope. I mean, you could, like, darn near see the aliens on Mars with one of those.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty cool. So, I passed your email along to our guest, Scott. I have not heard back from him on that, but he is a busy fella, and it actually took a little while to get everything worked out to even get him on the show. So I am sure he is probably going to look at it if he hasn't, and if he does ever get back in touch with us, I will let you know, John. And then lastly, from Ellen, who wanted to give us some music recommendations, she said that right now she is grooving to the original Grease soundtrack. And my prediction, I say meh, and Jeff probably is going to love it.
You betcha.
She also is listening to Leon Russell's Hank Wilson's Back from 1973, a cover of classic country songs. I love this album, says Ellen. I listened to it. I tried listening to it. It is definitely classic twangy country.
Yes, it is.
Not really my cup of tea, but I mean, it seemed like music that your grandpappy might have enjoyed. Yeah. She's listening to Wilco Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, which you know, kind of surprises me a little bit. Ellen doesn't seem like a Wilco listener. I'm not a huge fan. I tried listening to the album. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I might have to listen to it some more. I'm kind of on the fence about Wilco. And then lastly, the new single by Ray LaMontagne, Part One, Hey No Pressure, from the upcoming Ouroboros album. His last album, Supernova, in 2014 was excellent too. I really like Ray LaMontagne. I loved his album, Gossip in the Grains, from 2008, and listened to this Hey No Pressure, and I really like it. So I am definitely going to get that on my iPhone as soon as it comes out. Two thumbs up. So thank you, Ellen, for writing in with some music stuff that you're grooving to. Anybody out there who is listening to something you can't get out of your head, we would love to know what it is, because we are always looking to expand our lists.
I did want to point out, I did listen to your recommendations. I really enjoyed Anne-Marie Almodal.
Yeah, she's good, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. I thought that was two thumbs up. That was really good stuff. Just to throw in the what I've been rocking out to, not that anyone cares, but I'll tell you anyway. I have been listening to Paradise Theater by Styx. Don't know why, but decided I was going to throw that on. And that is a good conceptual album from beginning to end. And to keep going on that conceptual album thing, I threw on Rush's 2112 and listened to that. So anyway, those are what I've
albums.
Been. Yeah, that's what I've been rocking out to right now. Styx and Rush here recently. So
awesome.
Yeah.
So send us your albums, your music, the stuff that you have got just earwormed into your brain, and we will list it on an upcoming episode. You can call, you can tweet, you can email, whatever it is. We would love to hear from you. All right. So let's get to the fucking point of this fucking episode.
There you go.
We are going to talk about Deadpool, the movie, and we are going to spoil it. So, like, seriously, if you haven't already seen it and are still listening for some just strange reason, just stop. Go watch it. Go watch it twice. It is fantastic. I can't say enough good things about it. And we are going to ruin it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to give it our take and maybe talk about some of the fun things that it has done, like shatter all kinds of records for Fox and last minute budget cuts that almost train wrecked it, which I think actually probably made it better, and all that fun stuff. So, Jeff, you are our movie nut. You have seen this movie now four times.
Four times.
We wonder how come it has gone over $500 million. It's because of Jeff.
It's literally just me. I've no.
So what? Give us your take on this movie.
So just like an overall. I mean, the one thing, you know, Deadpool fell right into that when I kind of got into comic books thing. So I read Deadpool like. You know, I've read a lot of Spider-Man, but Spider-Man's been around forever. So, like, I haven't read all the Spider-Man because Spider-Man's been around forever. But Deadpool came out in the 80s.
Right.
And so I've read a lot of the early Deadpool. And the thing I will say about this movie, you know, I've said this. I kind of felt the same way about the second Captain America movie, too. But this movie in particular totally, in my opinion, captured the essence of what Deadpool is. And it's not for everyone, which is interesting that it's made so much money. I'm happy that it's made so much money. That's great. It's wonderful because, you know, we deserve these kinds of movies as, you know, adult fans who are willing to give money for something like this. But it's not for everyone. Deadpool is not for everyone. But that being said, they stayed pretty true to the comic books, at least in spirit of this is not a hero that everyone loves because he is not a nice person sometimes.
Well, and, in this movie, he's not a hero at all. He's an anti-hero.
Yeah, absolutely not. Well, he's an anti-hero almost all the time. I mean, he's like a cross between, I don't know, like Chandler Bing and and Wolverine.
Could I break any more fourth walls?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's just in the breaking the fourth wall. That's actually a very good point. He does that in the movie a lot, but he does that in the comic books. He is a comic book character who knows he's a comic book character.
Which, like, is kind of depressing if you think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he knows he's not real.
Yeah. I guess that there is that, but it's just, it was so enjoyable. And every time I went to see it, I picked something else up. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of hidden gems in it. More than I could even pick up in watching it four times. Like, you would have to sit and, you know, kind of pause and go slow-mo through a lot of the scenes, because there are a lot of the scenes, like when he's in his home after he's Deadpool, there are tons of Deadpool figurines hidden throughout the apartment.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
A ton. I mean, like, I counted at least seven, and I know there's way more. I know there's way more than that. So, I mean, it's like, you know, like I said, unless you sat in like what frame by frame, there are so many things I feel in this movie. I'll mention some of the things I noticed, but it's just it is so well done, and I don't know. What are your overall thoughts? I don't know how much of a Deadpool fan you were going into it.
So, I
know you saw it again. I know you saw it twice, yeah. But I feel like that the second time was more for the show. I don't know.
Okay. So it was, but here's the thing. Like it didn't, at no point in the second viewing was I like, oh, come on, let's get to the next scene. Like, the movie is not,
it doesn't drag. And no. And we'll get to a little bit about, I think, why it doesn't drag. And it basically comes down to money. But it is just excellently paced. I was kind of peripherally aware that there was a character called Deadpool. And that was about all I knew. And then that leaked footage, like a year and a half ago came out. And I watched it and went, holy crap, this looks amazing. And so I tried to educate myself a little bit about Deadpool after I saw that. And I read a few comics that I found online. I have not read anywhere near all of them. I have not immersed myself in the culture. But, you know, I'm a big Ryan Reynolds fan. Like, I like his movies. He makes me laugh. And, you know, couple that with a lot of violence and wisecracking quips and breaking the fourth wall, and I am there. That is a movie that is right up my alley. And so I loved it, not knowing a whole lot about his origin story and a whole lot about who he is, other than, you know, a wisecracking character who realizes that he is a character and talks to the audience, which I like that trope. I like when it's done in other vehicles, in other movies and television shows. I like that. So I come to it from I appreciate what they've done with it, but not really knowing the backstory. And not knowing the backstory, I think they do a fantastic job in the movie catching you up to who he is and kind of where he comes from and how he became Deadpool. You know, no complaints at all there. The irreverence throughout the whole movie, I think, is just like right in my wheelhouse. And it starts right at the very beginning where you cut into the credits, and it's you know, it's like a frozen scene that the camera's flying around, and then the credits are you know, just something that you wouldn't think a studio would allow a filmmaker to get away with. I mean, you know, it's things like, you know, starring God's Perfect Idiot and, you know, a CG character and a gratuitous cameo and an overpaid hack is the director. I mean, it's just the whole, when I went to see it, I went and saw it when it came out on the 13th, I think. Well, we saw it on the 13th, February 13th, and they were really billing it as the Valentine's movie. So I didn't see opening night, but I saw it the next day on Saturday. And it was a packed theater. It was an IMAX, and it was, I mean, there were probably 5 seats in the entire place that were open. And I mean, it's like within 30 seconds of the opening credits, I mean, the whole place was laughing. I mean, it was just rolling. And I mean, and that was sort of the tone for the whole movie. I coming at it from a comic book background, I loved it. And you know, there were enough nods to non-hardcore comic book people to still get the humor. Like in that opening credits, as they're flying through, you see, I think it's the opening credits, you see a wallet flipped open with Reynolds as the Green Lantern, like on the ID badge. And, you know, it's that got a laugh. And there are several references in the movie, like, you know, don't make my super suit green or animated, and that got a big laugh. And,
sure.
You know, that kind of stuff that if you are just casually aware of the Marvel world and not a hardcore comic book person, you're going to really get a laugh out of that kind of stuff. And then obviously the references to Hugh Jackman as Wolverine as opposed to just a character Wolverine, and there's some great, you know, humor in with that.
Now I don't know if you realize this, so the first joke he makes about the Wolverine is that, yeah, you know, I won't tell you who I had to, you know, I forget how he put it. Tell you who I had to jerk off, but it rhymes with Pulverine.
I actually, if you let me cue this up, here we go.
Oh, hello. I know, right? Whose balls did I have to fondle to get my very own movie? I can't tell you, but it does rhyme with Pulverine. And let me tell you, he's got a nice pair of smooth criminals down under. Anyway, I got places to be, a face to fix, and oh, bad guys to kill.
So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the first big dialogue in the movie.
Yeah, so something to note, that one of the reasons the Deadpool movie got made was actually because of Hugh Jackman.
Really?
He went to the Fox studio executives and told them that if they wanted him to do any more appearances as Wolverines, that they needed to back the Deadpool movie with Ryan Reynolds.
Now, is that because Hugh Jackman is a fan of Deadpool, or because Hugh Jackman is a friend of Ryan Reynolds, who is a huge fan of Deadpool?
I think it's because Hugh Jackman is a friend of Ryan Reynolds and saw the little teaser thing that Ryan Reynolds put together and said, this movie needs to be made. So
interesting. I did not know that.
Yay for the smooth criminals down under. That's just hilarious. Anyway. A couple other things in that first opening scene that I just wanted to throw out there. On the Starbucks cup, it says Rob L.
Right.
On the Starbucks cup. That refers to Rob Liefeld, who is one of the original creators of Deadpool.
Oh, okay.
Also, you notice a Hello Kitty.
Uh-huh. And there's got to be an in-joke there. I don't know.
There is an in-joke. If you look on Twitter at Deadpool, the only person that Deadpool is following...
is Hello Kitty?
Is Hello Kitty.
Is there a connection deeper in the story within the comic book?
Nope.
They just thought it was funny.
I think it's just that Wade Wilson thought it would be funny to link to Hello Kitty. I don't know. It's... Yeah.
Well, anyway. Okay. Can we even back up a second and talk about the fantastic marketing campaign, behind the movie?
Absolutely. I mean, Fox really got behind it, which is amazing. I don't know what they expected. I mean, they had drastic budget cuts, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on in the spoiler cast. But you know, it's I don't know.
Well, and there was huge gloom and doom, 2 years ago when the footage was leaked, and they basically said, yes, we're making it, and then everybody came out and said, oh, an R-rated movie you'll never do well, and it's going to be death to Marvel, and it's going to be death to the franchise, and it can't succeed, and it has to be family friendly, and you have to be able to take the kids to it. And I mean, I looked today as we were recording this, and according to the Google webs, it has made $520.6 million in what, 3 weeks? Two weeks? 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's the largest Fox comic book release ever.
Well, and I think that we should mention that they only gave them $58 million to make this movie.
Yes.
And yes, to you, to me, to, all of our listeners.
That's nothing.
Well, $58 million is a lot of money, but to make a blockbuster movie.
But not for a movie, guys. I mean, that is nothing. That is such a little amount of money.
I read that on average, the Marvel movies are like $130 million. So this is not quite a third of the budget. It's a little more than a third of the budget of, a Captain America or an Iron Man. And, so it cost them nothing. And it's gone on to make over $500 million. I thought it was really interesting that Reynolds only made $2 million up front.
Yes.
But he is eligible for back end, which could make him a boatload of money.
Yes.
Huge, huge boatload of money.
Yes, I don't even think the studios can pull a loss out of the jaws of actual victory on this one.
That studio accounting.
Yeah, no. I don't think they're going to quite pretend like this one didn't make anything. So yeah.
What I thought was interesting is I read that the director Tim Miller, who
he did not make much of anything.
No, he was paid a semi-standard studio fee for a first timer. Apparently, this was his big feature debut. Although the name sounds familiar, I swear that I know the name, but maybe I don't. Maybe I'm confusing him with somebody else. But he only was paid up front about $250,000, which, let's face it, I wouldn't say no if someone wanted to pay me $250,000. But that is not a lot of money.
No, it's not
at all. And interestingly, he is not signed on for the sequel. I think one of the few of the core that is not. So I don't know what that says about the sequel. I know that the writers are, and Rhys and the other one. I can't think of the other guy's name. And Reynolds are all on. I think most of the cast is signed on for the sequel, but not Miller. And I you got to wonder how much of that is not just the writers and Ryan Reynolds, but is also the director too.
Right. just to give you a heads up, Tim Miller is not really well known. He has done
Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I like that movie.
Well, he did visual effects for Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Oh,
not a director.
So, no. He did some writing for some shorts that got some acclaim a while back. Okay. He did wrote and directed Rockfish, which kind of got some play. But he is not, I mean, this is not,
yeah, this is kind of a big step up for him.
Right. So yeah, I mean, this is not, I mean, this literally is his debut.
But I would say he hit it out of the park.
Oh, I mean, you know, absolutely. Although I think, you know, Ryan Reynolds was also a producer on this movie. I mean, I think his hand was in this movie a lot creatively as well.
Absolutely.
He was so in love with the character that only makes sense. So
Yeah, no, and you know, so what we had kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, too, is that I guess right before filming started, the studio came and said, guess what, guys, you got to cut $7 to $8 million out of the budget. And they had 48 hours to do that. So, you know, they really did a lot with not a lot of money. And, you know, there's a quote I read from Rhett Reese who said, we had to carve something like $7 to $8 million out of the budget in a 48-hour window. And we as a group put our heads together, got creative, and said, how do we cut what is essentially 9 pages out of a 110-page script? So, I mean, they cut 10% of the script just right out. And I think that, you know, because of that, and to what I alluded to earlier, the movie doesn't drag. Like, there are no slow parts. There is no part where you're like, man, I could really get rid of that scene and I wouldn't miss it. I mean, it's, you know, sitting through it a second time, and obviously I've got some sound bites that I pulled out, and I probably broke several horrible laws because I took my little handy recorder with me to the theater and I recorded the whole thing. Yes, I did. Come get me, MPAA, so I could pull audio clips. And even going back and listening to chunks of it to find audio clips, it wasn't boring just playing the audio back. I mean, it is paced so well.
It really is. It's tight. It's a tight movie.
Yeah, and interestingly, because of the budget cuts, apparently they had to cut a lot of characters out. Angel Dust, played by Gianna Carino, apparently at the beginning was three different characters. Garrison Kane, Sluggo, and Wire. I don't know who those are. You probably do, Jeff. there was a motorcycle chase between Deadpool and Ajax on the freeway that they took out, and a big gunfight in the third act that they had to get rid of, which they covered
I was going to talk more about that as we started.
All right, well, we'll talk more about it. But so, yeah, they had a lot of things that they had to work around to get it made. Yeah.
So yeah, kind of going through the film, the first time where we meet Wade Wilson as Wade Wilson is when he is talking to a pizza delivery guy, right? That is actually pulled straight from the comic book pages of Deadpool number 10.
Is it?
Yeah. The pizza boy in that issue is named Gavin instead of Jeremy, but it's pineapple and black olive pizza. Huh. He asks if the crust was burnt. The guy says, no, I hope not. And he says, I specifically told them to burn the damn crust. Get in here. Anyway, in that comic book, however, he kills the pizza delivery guy. So they did tame it down just a little bit for the movie.
He's got to be a character that you want to sympathize with. And roughing up a stalker pizza delivery guy, okay, I can still sympathize with him. Killing him outright, it might make it kind of hard to ease into that movie and really like the guy.
More from that scene, the pizza is from Fiji's. Famous Fiji's Pizza, and that is probably a nod to Marvel Studio boss Kevin Feige, who, despite the movie being made at Fox, Feige was one of the people that helped bring X-Men, Daredevil, Spider-Man 2, and even Blade Trinity.
Which also had Ryan Reynolds in it?
No, Blade 2 had Ryan Reynolds.
That's right. I knew
Trinity did not. But anyway, so, you know, it just probably a reference to him.
Huh.
We kind of start moving into the scene then in Sister Margaret's school. Mm-hmm. That is actually from the Deadpool comics as well. It's officially titled Hell House in the comics, where Patch is the character, but they kind of Patch and Weasel.
They couldn't afford both, which is why they went with Weasel.
Absolutely. So they kind of melded those two together and put them in the bar, and that's, blah, blah, blah.
And can I point out, TJ Miller is one of the funniest comedians
out there. I love him. Yeah, he is so funny.
I have such a man crush on him. He's on Silicon Valley.
He is so good in that.
He's amazing in that. Yeah, he's popped up here and there. He was actually one of the voices in Big Hero 6.
Yes.
He is so funny. And like when you listen to other comedians talk about comedians that they like, they consistently say TJ Miller will just kill you. He is so funny, and he's like that all the time.
Yeah,
I couldn't think. I mean, I don't know what the Weasel character is supposed to be from the comic books, but I cannot now, seeing him in that role, imagine anyone else in that role.
I love him so much. It's perfect. One of the things I want to mention in the bar, when they are talking, they talk about the fact that Wade lets him know that his days in Special Forces weren't all that bad because he got to travel the world, and his friend completes the sentences for him, saying that to exotic places to meet new exciting people and then kill them. That is actually directly, word for word, lifted out of X-Men Origins Wolverine, where Ryan Reynolds played Deadpool, a.k.a. Wade Wilson, before.
Okay. So what's the connection with Florida?
The Jacksonville thing?
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
But they have a lovely TGI Fridays.
They do have a lovely TGI Fridays. That kind of comes in later as well. Interestingly enough, in the bar, we also get to see Rob, who I mentioned, the Rob L. on the coffee cup. He plays one of the patrons at the bar. When Wade Wilson first comes in, Buck is the first big burly dude, and then there's like kind of a normal looking dude sitting next to him. And he says, "Hey, Layfield." That is actually Rob Layfield.
Oh, really?
Sitting at the bar, and he gets a cameo in the movie.
Nice.
So
he is not, from what I have read, the gratuitous cameo though from the opening credits.
He is not the gratuitous. Well, we didn't really talk about the opening credits, which are amazing.
Yeah. Well, I said I loved them. I mean, right from the get-go, it had the whole theater in stitches. Stitches, I tell you. And I was really sad because when I went to see it again, it was obviously a much smaller crowd. No laughter. None whatsoever. Oh. Not a chuckle. Sad.
That's sad. That is sad.
It was.
Vanessa Carlisle, let's talk about her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
His girlfriend. One of the lines in the movie, she claims she's played a lot of parts in her life, but Damsel in Distress isn't one of them.
Okay.
That is a hint, because Vanessa Carlisle is AKA the copycat.
Oh, okay.
She is a shapeshifter. So
does she know she's a shapeshifter?
Oh, yet? I think that that's exactly what she means when she says that she's played a lot of parts in her life.
Hmm.
But Damsel in Distress isn't one of them. I think that that is a hint that she knows that she's a mutant. So anyway,
we don't know that unless you have a deeper understanding of the comic books. Because I did not know that. I thought she was just, you know, a hot chick.
Yeah, she is indeed a hot chick.
Well, yeah.
And I just want to point out, she is really good at playing prostitutes.
Oh, is she played a lot of prostitutes?
So Marina Baccarin was in Firefly as the companion.
Okay.
AKA.
I thought she looked familiar,
fancy,
but I couldn't.
Fancy name for prostitute. She was also in V. I don't know if you remember.
She was Anna, wasn't she?
Yes, she was, indeed.
Ah, that's it. I the whole time I'm like, man, she looks familiar, and I, you know, didn't bother to do any work to find out who she was. Yep, that's exactly who she was. Okay, I like her. Two thumbs up. I like her a lot.
Yes, indeed. I don't know how nerdy you want to get. I mean, I can go like way, 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 way nerdy.
I'll go deep, man.
Okay, so.
Balls deep.
Okay, Salt and Peppa.
Yes.
Shoop.
Uh-huh.
Right? Was released in 1993. Also the same year that Deadpool came to the comic books.
Well, I thought that he came out in the early 90s.
Nope. 1993. Which was also the year Salt and Pepper Shoop came out.
Okay, interesting.
Yep.
So no other connection other than the year. Like, there's not like a Salt and Pepper connection there.
No, just the year. I mean, there's just so many things that like they pull everything in together. There are a ton of hints in street signs in the first fight scene on the freeway. There's a Nicaruso Way, which is probably a nod to another co-creator of Deadpool, Fabian Nicoeza. I'm not pronouncing that right, but you get the idea. there is a Parker Boulevard.
Okay.
Which is probably Spider-Man.
Sure.
There are some references that I enjoyed. They go to Xavier School. Mm-hmm. I think three times.
Twice, definitely.
They talk about that. Negasonic Teenage Warhead mentions that. What are some of the benefits? The leotards or the mansion blowing up so many times?
Yeah, which it blows I think up every few years.
Yeah, it's actually a reference to Apocalypse, which isn't out yet, but the mansion does blow up in Apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
Just coming out later. One of the things in several of the dialogues, it mentions that he is Canadian. Mm-hmm. And Ryan mm-hmm. Reynolds is Canadian, and Deadpool right. is Canadian. He talks about being from Regina, Saskatchewan.
Right.
The city that rhymes with fun. That is actually in reference to a Rolling Stones concert where Mick Jagger said, "Hey, Regina, so happy to be here." And everyone knows Regina rhymes with fun. So
your knowledge of this astounds me. I don't have to do any work. I love it.
I'm like a little obsessed. the prized possessions, that was obviously funny. That was the Deadpool character that he played in X-Men Origins, mm-hmm. Which was the one I was talking about earlier. It was also, word for a quote. In that movie, his mouth is shown shut when he becomes Deadpool.
Right.
So he has no mouth. They mentioned that also in the some of the scenes where Ajax says that he wants right. to sew his mouth shut.
Yep.
So that references that.
Interesting.
Oh gosh, what else? Well, you already mentioned the super suit not being green or
animated.
We also got to see who I think it's probably Maro.
Okay.
The mutant who has all the spikes coming out of her back.
Oh, okay.
Is Maro. Marvel's Morlock Maro, and she is an X-Men character was in the X-Force Marvel comics, so that is probably indeed not
they kind of don't really talk about what happens to everybody that's in this place when it burns to the ground, so we assume that everybody died,
but I don't think that'll be the case.
Right.
I did enjoy, and I assume you noticed the Taken funny reference.
Some point you just have to admit you're a bad parent.
Yeah, exactly, which I thought was very well done. Oh, let's see.
It was such a small thing, and I think people loved it, but the interaction with the cab driver, Dipinder, I loved the scenes in the cab.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many people...
Dipinder.
Yeah. And I've seen so many people, talk about what happened to him. Like, we just see his cab wrecked with his brother-in-law in the back, and we don't know what happens to him. And, like, people care, and they want to know what happened to Dipinder.
You know what to do. Kill him.
And I love the interactions with him. I don't know if that actor has been in anything else that I've ever seen. That actor who is Karan Soni, he's going to be in the Ghostbusters remake.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Great. And has been in lots of TV and looks like kids stuff. Some Goosebumps, stuff like that.
So a lot of references to Spider-Man. I mentioned the Parker Boulevard. There were also two quips of the Go Get Him Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, "Go get him, Tiger" is what Mary Jane always says to Peter Parker.
I must have missed those because I don't recall them off the top of my head.
It is actually said twice in the movie. There's also the quip of "It looks like I got bit by a radioactive Sharpay,"
right?
Which is the radioactive spider. But interestingly enough, in the Deadpool comics, before this was even released, there was a panel in the Deadpool comics where Wade Wilson says, "Hey, it looks like I've a cross between Ryan Reynolds and a Sharpay." So
maybe that's why Reynolds likes the character so much. There seems to be a lot of tie-ins here.
Yeah, absolutely. I really, 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 really enjoyed the reference to McAvoy or Stewart.
Yeah. Oh, and is to who's playing Xavier?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah,
when Colossus is pulling him along, he says he's going to take him to see the professor. He says, McAvoy or Stewart, these timelines get so confusing, which is funny.
It surprises me. And I mean, obviously, maybe Marvel and Fox are less concerned about protecting their intellectual property than I would have thought they were. But I'm just shocked that they allowed the character to be so irreverent in this format. Obviously, a comic book is going to have probably a less wide audience. Fewer people are going to see it. But this is kind of throwing it right out there to how ludicrous some of the storylines and plot lines and universe changes are in these movies.
Yes. When he is being pulled away from Colossus, he then begins to slice his own hand off.
Uh-huh.
He talks about 127 8 hours.
Right.
Which, you know, is pretty, yeah, anyway. He also says, "Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Tell me that you know what that is, right?"
I know the quote. I don't know what it's for. It's a book, right? Isn't it?
Yes. It's a famous Judy Blume novel that it's a teenage girl coming of age book about when she gets her first period.
Okay. That's nice.
Oh yeah, I kind of
I don't know why you know that.
Because
that's not one that was in my health class really? In high school to read. No, not mine.
So I read every Judy Blume book. I don't know if I should admit that, but I did.
I would.
So like, here's the thing. Like, my mom was a second grade teacher, and Super Fudge. Is a Judy Blume book. That's a very, very second grade appropriate book. So I kind of got into the whole Judy Blume thing. There's like Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing. Why am I admitting I know this much about Judy Blume? But actually, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. It is a coming of age book. It's really more about in the book, her father, I believe, is Jewish and her mom is Christian, and they decided to not raise her with any faith. And it's her whole like coming to grips with what religion and who she is and stuff like that. But she also does indeed get her period. So anyway.
Okay, for the win, 100 points and the win, without looking at the internet, because I am on the Judy Blume Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Do you know which title covers masturbation? There is a Judy Blume book about masturbation. I want to see how many times I can say masturbation.
Masturbation. I can't tell you. I think the Super Fudge, Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing, and Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. That might be the depth of my knowledge.
But apparently, not content to cover masturbation one time, there are actually two books. There is a book called Deanie, a 1973 novel chronicling the life of 13-year-old Wildamadine Deanie Finner.
Okay.
Then there is also a book called Then Again, Maybe I Won't, intended for preteens and teenagers dealing with puberty from a male perspective. There you go. And surprisingly, Judy Blume is still alive. She is 78 years young. I would have thought she died back in the 80s.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Deadpool, let's see, they also talk to Ajax and Angel Dust at one point about, are you late for your midnight screening of Blade 2, which
right.
I know Reynolds was a part of.
And I would like to point out, he was in Blade Trinity. I did Google that.
Really?
He was.
I thought he was in Blade 2.
He was. Well, I don't know if he was in Blade 2. He was in
Blade. No, he was only in one, Trinity. So it must have been Trinity. Well, interesting. Okay, well, there you go.
But anyway.
We did have the gratuitous cameo,
yes, which was awesome.
And I do want to point out that one of the things that takes me out of reality is movies, TV shows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can accept that we live in a world where Deadpool exists. Like, I can go into a movie and I can go with that, right? Because Deadpool exists.
But not where Stan Lee is a DJ in a titty club?
No, what I was going to say is what takes me out of a movie, TV shows more so, is when they go into a strip club in a TV show and it looks clean and the women are all dressed.
And you want to have like a sandwich there.
And that's not, folks, for those of you who haven't been to a strip club, I'm going to save you the stripe of going, because they're nothing like that. The strip club in Deadpool, that's pretty much what they're like.
Yeah.
That is...
It's pretty grungy, pretty gritty.
Real strip club. And that strip club, the Orange Number 5, is a strip club in Vancouver, in case anyone was interested.
Was the movie filmed in Vancouver?
I have no idea. I do know that that is a strip club in
British Columbia.
In British Columbia, Vancouver. Interesting. Yep.
Oh, yeah. I you know, to go with what you said about pulling you out of a movie, I will say, when they do things like that where it's such a jarring disconnect, like seeing Stan Lee as the DJ at a titty club, it is kind of jarring. But I will give it to him for creating all of these amazing characters. So it doesn't bother me too much. And I got
Stan
this clip.
Stan Lee did not create it. So
there we go.
Hey, coming onto our stage right now, give it up for Chastity.
Irony, right?
I believe
that's
yeah. And then I think a few minutes later he says something about you can't buy love, but you can rent it for $3.
That's right.
For 3 minutes or something
that. The mansion that they visit for, I know at least twice, is actually a building that was used for the X-Men movies.
Oh, it's not CG.
It is in Haley Park National Historic Site in British Columbia. It was a stand-in for the Xavier Mansion in all the X-Men movies. It was also the home of Lex Luthor in the CW Smallville. And it is also Oliver Queen's former home on the TV show Arrow.
I am shocked that that is a real place.
That
I
is just indeed
assumed it was all place. CG.
Also,
and they don't build houses like they used to, do they?
No, they don't. And I will tell you this, that in the fourth viewing, I noticed in the hedges of said mansion, there's a hidden Mickey. Now, whether or not this is a hidden Mickey on purpose or that's just happens to be what the hedges look like in this Vancouver, British Columbia, but I would like to point out Marvel is now owned by Disney. So if it was a hidden Mickey on purpose, kudos to you, Ryan Reynolds / whoever did this movie and put that in there, because that's freaking.
I did not notice that, but that is really interesting. And I'm curious if it is just a complete coincidence or if there is a connection there, which it wouldn't shock me that there is a connection there, because I mean, come on, let's face it that I mean, you know, Disney's got people who probably live to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Deadpool in the comic books does indeed love chimichangas.
Does he love chimichangas, or does he love the word chimichangas? Because let's face it, the word chimichangas is a pretty good word.
Well, maybe a little both.
I've heard both on that.
Yeah.
Time to make the chimmy fucking changas.
That's right. Yeah, awesome, awesome. Love it. Superhero Easter eggs, the superhero landing, one of the best parts of the whole movie.
Isn't it?
She's going to do the superhero landing. She's going to do it. Watch.
Oh, it's so bad on your knees. And I don't know who that actress is, but she is a monster.
Okay, so let me tell you about who that actress is, because I know some things about that actress.
Okay, and we are talking about, where is she at here in my list? What's her name?
I'm not going to remember her name. I know some things about her, but one of them is not her name off the top of my head.
Okay.
Which is pretty bad. Her name is
Taylor Hickson.
Taylor Hickson. She was a UFC fighter.
All right. Also from British Columbia.
Oh, interesting. She weighs 145 pounds, which looking at her, I would have thought she weighs 275 pounds of muscle. But I think some of it is just CG or, you know, prosthetic type
interesting
stuff.
Interesting.
She was kind of a badass, you know, before the Ronda Rousey days of UFC. Interestingly, the quip of the superhero landing, there might be some joking on that, because she used to date none other than the current Superman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They used to be a thing. They are not anymore, but they used to be a thing.
And can I just point out, to just diverge for 1 second here. So one of the previews, one of the trailers, was the Batman v Superman. It looks atrocious. I've really wanted to thumbs
see,
up.
I disagree.
It doesn't look good.
I disagree. I think it looks really good.
It's the first trailer I've seen, and I'm not bullish on Affleck as Batman.
When he blocks Superman and Superman has that look, I think that's good. Sorry.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's good. I'm going to give it a try. You mentioned the TGI Fridays, and I wanted to mention that the former Special Forces that he talks to of Bob is probably a relation to Hydra Bob, which is a from the comic books, Bob, agent of Hydra, a regular occurring character in the classic movies. The Helicarrier from Avengers, which is
the big third act climactic fight scene.
So the third act climactic scene takes place on a helicarrier, which interestingly enough is not a Fox property. So I assume that's from Avengers.
Yeah, that's from Avengers.
And Avengers is Marvel slash, you know,
is
Disney.
But
it was very much so a helicarrier. So that's
It's Marvel's property. I'm assuming Fox licensed
assume that they got permission to do that. And I mean, you know, it makes sense that, you know, Marvel's starting to pull in some of these things and you know, I think some of these other, you know, Fox, this may be a sign that Fox is starting to relent some. Sony has relented some. They're giving Spider-Man back to Marvel, Disney.
I thought that they had to make an Abomination of a movie every few years or they were going to lose that franchise.
That is the case. But with the Civil War, Spider-Man will be in the upcoming Captain America Civil War.
Really? Oh, and, I might have to see that one.
Sony has given... what the deal that Marvel and Sony have come up with is because they can't make a Spider-Man movie worth crap over at Sony. Marvel, Disney came to an agreement with Sony that allows Marvel to make Spider-Man movies, and then Sony will be the distributor of the movies. So they'll still get a good chunk of money, but Marvel will own the characters. Portrayal in the cinematic universe.
Yeah, I don't understand all of that nonsense with the business side of Hollywood. But
because ultimately what we want is, you know, all of these characters all at the same time, all together. Like the Avengers, the X-Men. I mean, like, if you could have the perfect world.
Okay, but so talking about that for a second, can Deadpool, as he exists in Deadpool, appear in any other Marvel property?
He can appear as a, like, quip of a scene, but he cannot appear in. I mean, he okay. Let me.
He just can't exist for more than 40 seconds without saying something offensive.
Absolutely. So the thing is going to be, and I really think that they'll probably stick to this. He will not be a main character in any crossover type movie.
No, he can't
because he can't be. He just that is not possible. But he might be in a movie like, you know, a glimpse, a brief scene, that kind of thing. I mean, it's never going to be a big part.
Right.
It just can't be.
No. And that's kind of sad. I mean, I get it, but
we talked a little bit earlier about the third act scene, the big climactic battle, to which Colossus
Negasonic Teenage Warhead
and him are going Dupinder is taking them, right?
Right. Oh, and possibly, one of my favorite lines in the whole movie, when he goes to recruit
them. Big house. It's funny that I only ever see two of you. It's almost like the studio couldn't afford another X-Men.
Which is true.
And they couldn't afford another X-Men.
That is exactly what happened.
I love that. It made me laugh. Like, literally laughed out loud, was one of the few people in the theater the first time laughing out loud at that line. I don't know what was wrong with everybody else, but
I thought it was
killed
horrible.
Me.
Yeah, he gets all the guns, right?
Mm-hmm.
From his house, all the guns and all the ammo, extra ammo, lots of guns, puts it in his Hello Kitty duffel bag.
Yep.
And then leaves it in the cab.
Because they didn't have any money.
Because they didn't have any money to film the final scene with all the quips and, you know, fake guns and bullets and.
So, I mean, if you think about it, that is brilliant. I mean,
it is brilliant.
For them to come up with that, because the scene of them collecting all of the gun, everything leading up to it, I mean, it's awesome. And then they get there and, you know, he's trying to call Dupinder.
All he ends up having is the little 35 cal that he tucked
It's a 45.
It's a 35.
Even say 45 in the movie.
No, they say 35 in the movie. I've seen it four times. It is a 35 caliber.
I swear he said 45.
It is a 35 caliber Dillinger. Right. I know exactly what the
gun
is.
All right. It's awesome.
Make me come across And you know what kind of guns he carries on his hips, right?
I didn't pay that close attention. They looked almost like Desert Eagles.
They are. 50 cal Desert 50 cal Eagles, baby.
Desert Eagles, yeah.
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 Which is just freaking awesome. Yeah, anyway.
Okay, can I point out, this was driving me nuts. It looked like on his costume, up on his chest, there were two places to put little, like, throwing daggers.
Right.
Like, mounted on his breast.
Mm-hmm.
He never had those daggers in the whole movie.
Nope.
Drove me nuts because I want, like, take them off or put knives in. My OCD kicking in. I just had to get that out there.
That's funny.
Sorry. Yeah, and, you know, going back to what you said about the huge fight on the helicarrier and all of that, and, you know, they never actually said helicarrier. I mean, they never said Avengers craft, nothing. It was just a big hulking wreck that kind of looked like the Avengers helicarrier.
No, it didn't kind of look like it. It was the Avengers helicarrier.
From an attorney's standpoint, it kind of looked like it. I'm just curious if they just did it.
I don't, because
they
don't
never
know.
Said Avengers craft, helicarrier.
I haven't read anything about that.
Nick
and
Fury's
I just do want to point out
ride.
A lot of that third act also makes me think that she really is going to be copycat, because she got like tossed around a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't get hurt, like, you know, majorly hurt.
Right.
So I definitely think that she is indeed going to be copycat.
So, and that's interesting that you said that, because not knowing the character, that was one of the things probably that bothered me the most, is at the very end where she's in the oxygen deprivation chamber and she's flung off of this what looks to be 100-foot in the air and it's crashed down, and Colossus comes and picks up the piece of asphalt, and she's okay. She's in there. No big deal. And I don't know if this is because she's a mutant or just a continuity error, but when she's first put into the oxygen deprivation chamber by Ajax, and Deadpool throws one of his katanas to release the oxygen, there is a scene, briefly, where she grabs the katana and is pulling it out so she can open the chamber and get some air, and she cuts the hell out of her hands. Mm-hmm. And then when they cut to Colossus lifting up the asphalt, her hands are healed.
Yeah,
now, I don't know if that's just continuity or if
I don't
she
think it
has
is.
Mutant healing powers.
I think she has mutant healing
and
powers.
And I didn't notice it the first viewing, but I noticed it the second viewing, and I went, huh, I wonder what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, interesting.
So, I don't know. Some things that did bother me. I'm going to throw some things out that did bother me.
All right.
To be technically fair, while... Careless Whisper is indeed on the Wham album.
This really bothers you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does a little bit. It was on that Wham album. I do want to point out, it was on that Wham album that he mentioned. However, if you look at the notes from the album, it is a George Michael solo song released on the Wham album. So Careless Whisper, to be fair, is not a Wham song. It is a George Michael song.
That is picking nits.
It's nitpicky. Wow. A couple more nitpicks just for the sake of picking those nits. One of my favorite parts, I kind of want to talk about Colossus a little bit. Loved the scenes with Colossus. Thought it was hilarious when he gets all ashamed because he gets to see Angel Dust's babushka, I think is what he says. thought that was hilarious. But earlier in the scene, Angel Dust is choking Colossus with a cable, and he is gasping for breath. And Colossus doesn't need to breathe when he's in metal form.
But so, see, for those of us who are not comic book nerds, it made for a more entertaining scene.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, like, again, I'm picking of the nits, but it is a nit to indeed be picked, because he doesn't need to breathe when he's in Colossus form.
So this is an interesting bit of trivia that I just found in looking at this. Two, actually. Well, the first one, which, you know, okay, this makes me like Ryan Reynolds a little bit less, but it says the original Deadpool costume had a muscle layer underneath that they had to remove because Ryan Reynolds became so muscular for the role that the costume was not only too tight, but made him look overlarge.
Yep.
I would like all of my clothes to be tailored with a muscle layer underneath them because, yeah, I am never going to look like he looked at any point in my life, even if it was for 2 seconds before I died, spontaneously exploded. The man has muscles on his muscles. It's insane. And I thought this was interesting, too. Apparently, the other names on the Deadpool board, which is where he gets the character name from in the movie, I don't know if that's how his origin comes to be in the comic books, but I didn't catch this in looking at it, even though they show it a couple times, but apparently it had the name Ryan Reynolds, TJ Miller, that Bob Liefeld, Mike Tyson, Vladimir Putin, Ozzy Osbourne, Charlie Sheen, Shia LaBeouf, Bill Cosby, Lindsay Lohan, Miley Cyrus, and Kanye West. So that's kind of awesome. I like that.
Yeah, that's funny. Now, some that I looked up, so here, I want to, full disclosure, I looked these up, didn't know about it, but I was trying to see, you know, I was trying to do my due diligence and see if I what I had missed, and I did miss some things. Interestingly enough, in the scene where they're going through all the holidays, there's a part where they're in Lent and they're sitting and reading a book.
Right.
And the book that Ryan Reynolds / Wade Wilson / Deadpool is reading is Mario Lopez's Just Between Us, which apparently is a makeup for the fact that before Deadpool was released, he actually announced on April 1st on Extra Interview with Mario Lopez that the movie would be PG-13, only to end up making Lopez look like a fool the day later, saying that was just an April Fool's joke. And Lopez had regretted the fact that he fallen victim to that, and they think it was put in just so that
just to rub just, the salt in a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought this was interesting. It is the first R-rated movie ever to open above $100 million at the U.S. box office.
That's
interesting when you think about like all of the R-rated movies that there have been.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
I like money and lattes. What are like some of your other facts?
Oh, gee, let's see. I can't. I'm trying to go through all my notes. I've talked so much. My voice is...
I love the fact that Reynolds kept the suit.
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
He said that he's earned it. He said, quote, "I loved wearing it, and I have run away with one. I'll probably get in trouble for saying that, but I've waited 10 years to do this movie, so I'm leaving with a fucking suit." And walked off the set on the last day of filming with the suit.
Yeah.
Now, where on earth could he wear that? Like, he would be sworn... Like, he couldn't go to Comic-Con in an authentic screen Deadpool costume. I feel like he couldn't do that. But that's awesome. I kind of want to hope that the next Deadpool I see at a con is actually Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That I'm sure would be it won't be, but no, I want to believe.
That would be funny. Yeah, I do too. Couple other things that I thought were interesting that may hint to upcoming X-Men Apocalypse. One of the small jokes that is made, this obviously takes place after X-Men Apocalypse, thus the reference to the house blowing up, is he makes a joke saying, "And tell Beast to quit shitting on my lawn,"
right?
Which probably means that Beast will not die in X-Men Apocalypse.
I will only accept him if he continues to be played by Kelsey Grammer.
He was not played by Kelsey Grammer in the most recent...
Not the most recent one, but the one that counts.
Well, I don't know.
I need 100% more Kelsey Grammer on the big screen.
Yeah, I kind of like the guy that plays him now. So
yeah, I don't know who that guy is. I do like him. What have I seen him in? He's seen him in some other stuff.
A couple of other references. He makes the reference, "I'm just a boy standing in front of a girl." That's from Notting Hill.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, that was kind of fun. Let's see.
It is Nicholas Holt, by the way, who plays Beast. He is the zombie from Warm Bodies, as well as Nux from Mad Max Fury Road.
Fury Road. Yep. He was in Fury Road. I remember that now. Oh, when he's talking about Ajax and he goes through all the names.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably, Cyclops. He mentions Scott, which is probably Cyclops. Uh-huh. He mentions the name Bruce, which is probably Bruce Banner. He mentions, why has this gone out of my head? The last one he talks about is Basil Fawlty, which is the character from Fawlty Towers, which is fun.
Brilliant. My favorite Fawlty Towers bit, you know, how they start every show with the sign, and it's got some tweak. And there is an episode where it's Flowery Twats, and that's my absolute favorite Fawlty Towers bit.
I think I'm running out. I think that's it. I think I've mentioned all the ones that I had listed.
You have shot your proverbial load?
Yeah. Oh, they make fun of the Batman thing. That was kind of fun too.
The Batman thing. I don't know if I caught that reference.
Where he talks about when he's going into back to home and he's saying that she's his Robin.
That's right. With Al.
Yeah. With Al, but he says, unlike Robin, I think she loves me.
Right.
And he's like, well, no. Yeah, I thought that was funny. Let's see what else.
Oh, here you go. Reynolds himself has said that there are over 100 references throughout the entire film, including Easter eggs, pop culture references, cameos, and direct hits at other Marvel films.
Oh, yeah.
I will leave that as an exercise to you, the listener, to find out what all 100 are, and then send us a compiled list, double-spaced 12-point font, please.
Yeah, that's funny. So, you know, it was just so much... was so fun. I wonder... if they'll be able to do the next one, you know, as well.
Well, I mean, that is the big question, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, and some things are so good and you build up such an expectation that, you know, can a sequel ever live up? And, you know, the one I think of, which is good, but it's nowhere near as good as the original, is Anchorman. I loved Anchorman. And the second one was all right, but it wasn't, there was definitely catching lightning in a jar with the first one. And I hope that smart, creative, funny people can do it justice. I would really hate for Deadpool 2 to be sad and stupid and sell-out-y, because I enjoyed this one so much. So hopefully they don't ruin it. Because they're going to make it, whether it's good or bad. They're going to make it because it's going to make a bajillion dollars.
Sure. Yep.
And if it's really bad, I will BitTorrent it just to spite Hollywood.
That's funny. Well, they got plenty of money out of me on this.
I went and saw it twice.
Yeah, well.
Oh, and
that's about half as many times as I saw it. So there you go.
I am half the man that you are. That's just the way it is. I stand in your shadow, Jeff. You know what's funny is as I was going to see it, I kind of spur of the moment called my wife's 15-year-old nephew. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go see Deadpool. You want to go with me? He's like, hell yeah, I do. So I picked him up and we took him and we went and saw it. And, you know, he laughed. And, you know, of course, being a 15-year-old who, you know, has to be cool all the time, you know, we're leaving. I'm like, oh, so what'd you think? Wasn't that awesome? He's like, yeah, it's pretty good. And so we got back to his house. I dropped him off and his mom's like, so did you like the pool movie, the Deadpool? And he's like, oh, yeah, it was pretty good. And she's like, I heard it was kind of bad. And he goes, it wasn't that bad. I'm like, don't tell your mom how bad this was. I don't want her to hate me. So I am nice. Doing my part to corrupt the youth in this
way
country.
To go.
Yep.
That's funny. hey, I just read some other fun things. Apparently on the Deadpool list includes Cosby, B.
Right.
Sheen, C. And LaBeouf, S.
Yep. I already mentioned that.
Did you really?
I did. See, this is how much you pay attention to what I say.
Well, I just feel like
I bring nothing to the party.
Well, I just feel like I talked so much and...
No, you are our movie guy.
Oh, it was so good.
So 4 stars, 5 stars, what do you give it, Jeff?
I can't imagine in any way that it could be better for me. I mean, this was... There's nothing I would change. I mean, there is nothing I would change. Because, you know, they could have had more X-Men characters in. They could have done, you know, all those things that they had to take out because of budget constraints.
I kind of feel like
it helped. And, you know, like I said, I can't think of ways that I just loved everything about it.
Yeah, there are few movies.
Oh. The other thing I wanted to talk about. I'm sorry. The one other thing. Colossus, when he's talking about the 4 or 5 times.
Right. Right.
That you know, become it. Interestingly enough, Ryan Reynolds has played a Marvel superhero, a comic book hero 5 times.
Oh, interesting. And so. I have read that he will not play any further superheroes. He will play additional
Deadpool
in additional movies, but this is it. He's not doing any more superhero parts.
But he was in Blade, which is a comic book movie.
Right.
Green Lantern. In Green Lantern, which is a comic book movie.
R.I.P.D., right?
R.I.P.D., which is a comic book movie. This Deadpool, and then the X-Men.
What, does X-Men count?
Yes, it counts.
Was Deadpool in the X-Men. Well, he was Wade Wilson in
He was that. Wade Wilson, but it was not the same. It counts. He's been in five. He's been in five comic books.
I'll give it to you, but under protest.
Okay.
But anyway, so yes, I agree with you. Go see it. There are few movies that I say I have high rewatchability of. And like I said, I saw this one 2 weeks after I saw it for the first time. Loved it the second time. It's one that I will order on Blu-ray as soon as it can be ordered on Blu-ray.
But if you hadn't caught from our discussion, this is not a movie for children.
No.
I guess we didn't really say that, but I think to be fair, let's do point out that this probably isn't the movie for kids. I mean, there's anal sex, there's...
But just light anal sex.
There's no such thing as light anal sex.
It's kind of like minor surgery.
There's two references to anal sex, actually.
It's kind of like minor surgery, and that is surgery that's not happening to you. So light anal sex is anal sex that is not happening to you.
Okay. But I mean, you know, there's full frontal nudity men, full frontal nudity women. There's, you know, sex acts, there's language, there's beheadings, beleggings, bearmings.
I would like to point out that the nudity bothers me less than the violence. Like,
violence was insane.
It was. Well,
okay. But to me, there's a difference between nudity because, like, the nudity in the strip club, yeah, who cares? You saw some boobies, you saw some, and the nudity with him getting thrown around half naked, okay.
It was a fight scene.
But you have to admit that some of the sex scenes were a little, yeah.
But, you know, I will say this. It did not paint either of them in a position of disadvantage. It was done absolutely. Romantically.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was not, you know, hey, let's get a girl naked because we need to put some boobies in this because we've got an R rating. So since we've got the R, let's show some tits and vag. I mean, it was hate to say tastefully done, but tastefully done.
Yeah. Like I said, it might be a stretch, but as tastefully as you can
As you can be with light anal.
Yeah.
But my point is...
I think light anal is defined by anal that isn't happening to you.
I still think that the violence was a lot more gratuitous than the nudity. And if I had my druthers of spoiling a kid, it would be to show them the nudity over the violence.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because again, the nudity wasn't painted in a person being taken advantage of, or you know, it was you know, between two people that obviously cared for each other.
Yeah, okay.
And I will say that does seem to be a bit rare. Yeah, compared to like 50 Shades of Grey, which is a terrible movie with no redeeming qualities.
I can't say that I've seen it.
So bad. Do yourself a favor. Don't humor the wife and watch 50 Shades of Grey.
I have no, there is no way. Like, there is literally no way that I will ever see that movie.
I suffered so you don't have to. And I mean, even at the end of it, my wife turned to me and went, that was it? What the hell did we just watch? It was so bad. So, yeah. Yes. Save yourself the hour and a half. It is completely without merit. It is not good. But anyway, so we have been talking for a long, long time, a long ass time, because we can still swear, right?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. As I'm perusing the webs of Enter, we're talking.
Last fact, because we got to wrap it up.
Okay, Marina Baccarin
has
also played Gideon on The Flash. She does the voice of Gideon, the computer-generated... time thing. That's interesting.
Superheroes are a small world, apparently.
They are. Okay, I'm sorry.
And sadly,
we've been talking for over an hour.
I was going to say, this podcast may actually end up being longer than the movie. We could have spoiled the movie by literally playing the audio of the movie.
Which apparently you... I don't know how comfortable I am with the fact that you admitted and...
It will be deleted. It was just for research purposes. See, you said you wanted to take notes. I went one better.
I think that is indeed taking the ultimate note. Were you like that guy like filming it? You didn't film it.
I did not
you?
Film it. No. Okay. Oh God. No. 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 I recorded it. You know.
Okay.
Why not? Why you gotta get it?
What in the ass?
That was me. I was just right there. I was recording it. That way I could pull fun little clips out.
Yeah. You kind of got me painted in a corner here.
Oh, it was so good. But anyway, so we should talk about what we love and let these people get back to their day because we've probably just ruined it so much for them.
Tell me, Jacob.
I will tell you what I love. And what I love, this is going to be the wussiest sounding thing after all of this talk of light anal and of gratuitous violence. I love a scrapbooking tool. So
I just feel like Deadpool just wants to jump through this podcast and rip your throat out for saying this. But go
me.
For it. Yeah.
So my wife had decided that she wanted to try her hand at scrapbooking, and I don't really know where she got the idea that she wanted one, but she got the idea that she wanted a Cricut scrapbook cutter. And what it is, for those of you that aren't like sissies apparently like me, is it is basically a 2D plotter that will cut out stuff, and you can make really garishly overdone scrapbooks. What I love is the Cricut Explore Air. What's really nice about it is it will hold not only the cutting tool, but it will also hold a pen at the same time. So not only will it cut stuff out, but it will also draw stuff in. It can cut a variety of materials. It'll cut paper, fabric, vinyl, cardstock, etc. So anyway, we picked it up for her as an early birthday present. And I honestly think I have used it more than she has at this point. It is like just an awesome accessory for makers. I picked up some vinyl adhesive at the craft store a week ago, and I cut out a decal for my iPhone case and a notebook that I carry. I cut out a No Better Than Average logo, which turned out awesome. I've already got a couple of other projects in mind for it to make some professional looking labels for an electronic project that I want to make. They're kind of expensive. The one that we got was like $240. But if you are a maker or a crafty person or want to get into scrapbooking, it is really cool. There are two models that I can recommend, the Cricut Explore and the Cricut Explore Air. And from what I understand, the only difference between the two is that the Air version has built-in Bluetooth. You can get the Cricut Explore for about $40 less. And if you already have that one, you can actually buy a module for it for about $40 that is a plug-in Bluetooth module. And since it's wireless, you can get the Cricut app for your phone or tablet. So you can actually design on an iPad or an iPhone and send it to print to the Cricut from your portable device. So they're really cool. I highly recommend checking them out. They're a neat gadget if you like making things or are crafty at all. I'll put a link to it. I can't imagine anybody's going to go out and buy one on my recommendation, but watch some YouTube videos. They're really cool. That is what I love. Now, I believe you have a What You Love, Jeff, that is far more appropriate to this episode.
Yeah, I'm going to give you one that is I'm going to give you two. You're going to get a twofer.
Ooh, a twofer.
A twofer, two. The first one I want to talk about, I don't know if you saw it, but it just came out last night. I watched the Oscars. I am a movie guy.
I did not.
Watched the entire Oscars. I taped the Jimmy Kimmel special after the Oscars.
Did you, Grandpa? Did you tape it?
Okay, I DVR'd it. Whatever. You know what the fuck I mean, you ass bag. Anywho, watched it today, and there is something on it that everyone should go YouTube, whatever, wherever you can find it, because I'm sure it's on YouTube. Jimmy Kimmel did a thing with Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane.
Oh, okay.
And it was supposed to be the sequel to The Producers. And it's basically that they are going to run Donald Trump for president and lose all this money. Because who would elect Donald Trump? And it is the most hilarious thing. They're like, did he say the thing about that they're going to build a 100-foot high wall and he's going to make the Mexicans pay for it? And they're like, yep. And it's like, well, did he say he was going to deport 1 million Muslims? And it's just hilarious. It is so funny.
Oh, I have to look
so
for that.
You got to go look that one up. And then for the one that is appropriate to this spoiler cast, a.k.a. Deadpool, a.k.a. everything inappropriate that we've talked about, I happened to catch a news story on the webs of Inter today that talked about that on Imgur now, you can find a person who has posted every Playboy Playmate ever for that the centerfold pose for every Playboy Playmate ever. From 1955, the first Playboy Playmate centerfold was
Marilyn Monroe.
Absolutely. So it goes all the way from her to February of 2016, which was the last centerfold. Do you know who the last centerfold was?
I don't. I am actually looking purely for research purposes.
Christy Garrett. Don't know who that is, but she was Miss February 2016, the last fully naked Playboy centerfold ever.
Oh, you know, I got to say this. Like, she just dropped down like about 20 notches because she's holding a lit cigarette. That is not sexy to me.
And she's laying on a fur, which is kind of odd, too.
So PETA hates her. The anti-smoking people hate her. But they really went out with a bang.
But go up one in Miss January. Not too shabbily.
She's got lots of talent.
Yes, she does.
That's what I'm going to say about
that. Anywho, it is interesting, even not just because it's naked women, because, you know, I enjoy naked women, I'm not going to lie. But it is interesting to see the difference between, I guess it was 1953. God, I was off by 2 years. From 1953, the first Playboy, to now, and going through and seeing the changes of, you know, just what a nude photo meant. You know, a lot of people talked about when I was reading the comments, it was like, oh, look at the difference in body types. And, you know, everyone now has, you know, huge, you know, fake boobs and blah, 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 blah. But if you actually scroll through it and look at it for respecting what you see, there are women from the 50s that had ginormously talented tracts of land and that didn't have. And there are larger, you know, none of them are fat, let's face it, but there are larger girls and there are super skinny girls all throughout the year. So I don't really find body types to be different.
Well, I would say probably the last 10 or 20 years, they definitely trended towards much skinnier and they were much more curvaceous in the beginning.
Yeah,
not in a bad way, just in a different way.
In a different way, but there were some early on that were very slender, very skinny as well. So, I mean, you know, I just think, you know, you're right, more curvy originally. I would agree with that take. But as I was scrolling through, just one of the things that I kind of wanted to notice, because as you scroll through, for the first, you know, all through the 50s, all through the 60s, up until 1971 is the first time you see any signs of the pubic region of a female being exposed in Playboy.
Yeah, which I think a lot of the early ones, they're wearing underwear or otherwise completely covered up. Not even a hint that they're completely, you know, that there's something else down there.
Right. So I thought that was interesting. 1971 is where they break that barrier. And then pretty much from then on out, you're going to see hair of various kinds, colors, shapes, sizes.
Believe that we call those the jungle years. And I just want to point out, just flipping through here, Miss July 1959, honest to God, looks like you could pull her out of that picture and put her in a picture today, and she'd look like she'd be a hipster. Like, she's listening to a record, there's a bottle of wine. I mean, that picture looks modern. That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she looks completely wasted, too. I just want to point out.
Yeah, well, she probably was, which that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with a little roofie.
Whatever floats your boat. So 1981 was what I would say the first time that you ever saw what I would say is genitalia, I think is maybe the appropriate way to say.
Some just full-on vag.
Yeah.
We could be vulgar. We've been talking about Deathpool for an hour and a half.
That's true. I was trying to be a little delicate.
Nah,
but yes, full-on vag.
Beaver.
Came into the 1981 era. And then you don't really see any changes until about 2001, when you see a very, very large change of basically going from full-on pubic hair-arama to no pubic hair whatsoever at all on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand. I don't know that I understand that, but it is a thing. So
I think I have read articles that have talked about that, and it is largely because of pornography, which definitely has seen an explosion with the internet.
Sure.
And the trend for ladies in those films to have nothing downstairs. I believe the term is hardwood floors. and that has just sort of become like you see it, and so there's the assumed, well, that must be normal, and then women sort of follow the trend. And I've actually read some interesting articles, and when I say read some interesting articles, I literally mean read some interesting articles about sort of the reverse of this trend that has been growing over the last few years, where women are like openly rebelling of, well, that is the porn look, and I don't want that. And so apparently, pubic hair is coming back in a big fuzzy way. So me being a child of the 80s and 90s, I don't know how I feel about that, but take that for what you will.
Another interesting couple things that I will just point out. We did not see a black lady in Playboy centerfold until the 70s.
Ah, okay. I didn't even notice that.
Which I thought was interesting. You did not see any other obvious Asians until the 80s.
Huh.
So just a couple of interesting things. I don't know what that says about Playboy culturally, but I would, you know.
It was a magazine made by a rich old white guy, and he was forced to become ethnically diverse.
I would assume that says. I think that you are probably right, but yeah, 1969. I was off by a year. That was the first African American
civil rights black, and all whatever. That. That would have been right in that time.
Yeah. So anyway, just kind of interesting. You know, even if you aren't interested in seeing women unclothed, there are some interesting things to be gleaned. I do think you pointed out that you can definitely tell you when you hit the 80s.
Oh yeah, the 80s are specific look.
There is a very specific look that lasts almost all the way through the 90s. I would argue in Playboy there was a specific look that they were going for, and I'm not sure I like it, but it happened.
It's very dated. I mean, you look at it and you're like, I mean, it definitely the 80s grab you by the throat and, you know, smack them titties in your
face.
I don't know
whether or not you find it interesting, but like if you actually go through it, I would say like if you look at the 70s and the more recent, there's a lot more in common.
I would agree with that.
Like you could pull the pictures out of the 70s and put them in now, and I don't think people would be like, I mean, I feel like that would fit.
There seems to be just all over culture sort of that nostalgia.
Yeah.
And that definitely kind of, I think, hits. Honestly, going back into the late 60s, I think a lot of those styles and just the photography styles and the hairstyles and the clothing, I think you would be hard-pressed if you put them side by side to hit every one of the decade and be like, yep, that's definitely from the 60s. That's definitely from the aughts. I think you kind of blur the lines.
Yeah. Just interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I would like to point out that I was just scrolling through here, again, purely for research purposes, honey, and I landed on Jenny McCarthy, 1993, which...
She does not look like Jenny.
Yeah, like in my head, I kind of remember, like that's probably about the time I started reading Playboy purely for the articles, and I remember the picture, and in seeing it, I'm like, well, that doesn't look like her at all. She honestly looks like she's late for school, and she looks like a kid. And it does not look like Jenny McCarthy. It is a bit disturbing that my memory is so out of touch with what reality was.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. And yeah, I'm going to say early 2000s, not so much, but later 2000s definitely kind of have that late 60s vibe.
Yeah.
It's interesting how, you know, fashion and styles are cyclical. Yeah, that's interesting. I am not going to put a link to this in the show notes, but if you are interested, find it on Imgur, and that is imgur.com. You can find all kinds of stuff on Imgur, both safe for work and not safe for work. So please don't come complaining to us if you get fired looking at Imgur at work. I'm just going to put that big old hashtag on it right now.
Don't go look at Imgur at work.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's... Don't do that. But it's kind of interesting. Like I said, if nothing else, it's a cultural interest because, I mean, it's been around for a long time. I mean, that's, you know, from the 50s.
Yeah.
But I would say that going to the quote unquote no nude model is not necessarily that far from what it was originally, because originally they showed breasts some, but there are several centerfolds that show no nudity at all. So, I mean, you know, I think that that's okay.
Yeah, and I know they still have the centerfold, but as I understand it, it's more of a risque maxim type thing, and no nudity now. I have not seen I guess the February one was the last one. I have not seen a picture of the March one, so I have no idea what the future has in store. Sadly, I am no longer a subscriber, but now I can literally say I get it for the articles if I ever resubscribe.
Right. Nice.
I'm hard pressed to spend, you know, 20 some bucks a year on a magazine subscription when there's so much good content on the internet, which, I mean, I would subscribe to it for the interviews and for the fiction, and you can get a lot of that online now. You don't have to have that dead tree in your hand anymore.
Yep.
So that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Very cool.
Well, Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this fucking awesome episode of the No Better Than I got to get it in while I still can, right?
That's right.
Of the No Better Than Average podcast. We enjoyed talking about Deadpool because let's face it, it was a freaking awesome movie. If you didn't like it, I apologize that you have no taste. I want to take a moment to thank our patrons, Carl, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, Jimmy, John, Kai, Scott, and Todd. Thank you so much. We appreciate your support, and I guess that wraps it up for the episode. If you want to call in, give us any questions, comments, tell us how we shouldn't use this filthy, disgusting language as much as we did. Feel free to do so. We probably won't listen to you, but that's okay. You can call us at 317-643-1212. You can always head on over to Twitter at No Better Show or at Not The Real Jacob or at Jeff_Cheney or head over to Facebook, leave comments, questions there as well. We would appreciate it. I'm glad that you listened to us for this hour and a half. You got a long one today, folks. You're welcome.
We're passing the savings on to you.
That's right.
I just want to point out, I am disappointed that this ended up being episode 70 and not episode 69.
Yeah, that would have been more appropriate.
Because I'm juvenile, and yeah, it didn't work out that way. Sorry, folks.
Well, you know.
What are you going to do?
Got to pay tax, man.
That's right.
So now that you've listened to the No Better Than Average podcast, hopefully you will know better than average too, at least about Deadpool.
That's right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Fuck you guys. Fuck you all. See you next week.
See ya.
You're still here. It's over. Go home. Oh, you're expecting a teaser for Deadpool 2. Well, we don't have that kind of money. You expecting Sam Jackson to show up with an eye patch and a saucy little leather number? Go, go. Oh, but I can tell you one thing, and it's a bit of a secret. The sequel, we're going to have Cable. Amazing character. Without a garb, time travel. We have no idea who we're going to cast yet, but it could be anybody. Just need a big guy with a flat top. Could be Mel Gibson, Dolph Lundgren, Keira Knightley. She's got range. Who knows? Anyway, big secret. Shh. Oh, and don't leave your garbage all lying around. It's a total dick move.